This is Mod Love, the show that tackles dating, mating, and relating in the modern world with your host, premier dating mentor and coach, Jody Riley, and her partner from Straight Talk with Steve, Stephen Cardinal. Also featuring Ann Wade, our soulmate expert from soulmatedance.com.
Welcome, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
Welcome back to our first show of September. We're excited about it. We've got some brand new stuff going on this month.
And we're back in full-length mode. So if you're tuning in saying, I'll just whack out a quick 20 with Steve and Jody, you're going to be here with us for a little bit longer. Obviously, you can always still pause it after 20 and then come back and listen to another 20 tomorrow and another 20 the day after that.
This is true. Although I don't think they're we've been more
they're
than
not
quite
exactly 20.
Yeah.
They're roughly.
But we give you three segments, so it's easy to, if your commute's like 15 minutes or so, you can catch a segment on your way in, maybe catch another segment on your way back home. You know, a lot of people have a lot longer commutes. We only have like a 15-minute commute.
Yeah, we have quick ones.
Yeah, so, but anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. I think we have a fantastic show. We have a great listener question tonight about something that I posted up on our Facebook page.
Law of attraction kind of stuff.
Yeah, law of attraction, and it was actually based on a quote by Dr. Wayne Dyer, who, those of you out there who are listening may not know that he passed away this week.
Yeah, just a few days ago.
Yeah.
And so actually our third segment is going to be talking a bit more about him.
Yeah.
I know that he had a lot of influence on you. You've read a lot
yes.
of his stuff, so we're going to talk a little bit about one of his stories from one of his articles back there, just kind of talk about a little bit and also pay a little tribute to this person who has done so much for so many people, really a self-help guru and just very enlightened and touch sort of individual who's helped so many people.
Yeah, it's so interesting that he was one of those people that was so renowned by people in the non-religious community, the secular community, even, and the religious community, even though he didn't necessarily aspire to any particular religion. You know, he always said, instead of trying to be a Christian, be Christ-like. Instead of trying to be a Buddhist, be Buddha-like. And so I think so many people really, really gravitated towards his message. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But this listener question that came up actually was because I had posted that quote kind of saying, you know, rest in peace, Dr. Dwyer. And if you want to go ahead and read that listener question, we'll just jump right in.
Well, we want to let them know the rest of the show.
Oh, that's
too, right.
That's right. I'm sorry.
We have a guest with us for segment two. We were able to have an interview with a therapist, Hernando Chavez, Dr. Chavez, and he is, we kind of came in touch with him through Psychology Today, but he's also a teacher and has his own practice. And
he has,
else
he's
is
a sex therapist practice.
Right.
He also teaches, and he'll talk a little bit about that in his segment tonight.
Well, yeah, we'll be discussing male sexuality with him.
Yeah.
So that should be an interesting segment. So definitely, even if you have one of those short commutes, join us for that. If you have to hit pause or skip ahead and then get back to us, or just hit it in your second commute. But you'll definitely want to check out that because he was a very good interview.
Yeah, he was a fantastic interview. And if you are a listener to the show, you know we pull up a lot of articles and we pull a lot from Psychology Today. It's one of my favorite places, kind of my go-to places to look for kind of what's going on in the world as far as issues that people are having. And we actually reached out to Dr. Ava Cadell, who was not able to work it into her schedule, but she pointed us to Dr. Chavez. And so he was very gracious enough to give us a great interview. So so that'll be coming up there in our second section. I can't even
second
talk tonight.
Second segment.
Second segment. I need to drink more beer.
There you go.
But so let's go ahead and jump into that listener question.
Okay.
Now.
So segment one is the listener question, and the questioner wrote, "You posted a quote that says we don't attract what we want; we attract what we are." And I'm confused. I keep attracting cheaters and liars, and I don't do either. How can I be attracting what I am when that's not what I am?
I am what I am.
Sorry, that was not in the question.
That was not in the question.
This is why law of attraction is hard for me to understand.
And it's interesting because you and I started talking about this last night, and I think that one of the things that and if you look at sometimes a lot of these quotes, a lot of times people take these very literally.
And that's usually a mistake when we're talking about, especially about emotional things.
Right.
Is trying to find out what's the message inside there that you can take away. I mean, one of the things we talked about a little bit today when we were chatting with each other is, you know, worms attract both fish and birds, but a worm isn't a bird or a fish. It's more, it's the right bait. It's what a bird and a fish want to eat. So
right.
I think when we're saying we don't attract what we want, we attract what we are, there's a less literal interpretation where what we are is attractive to those types. So in this case, the person who attracts the cheater, it's not that they're a cheater and a liar. It's that whatever
the vibe they're putting out,
their behaviors and energy and whatnot are more the things that those people will feed off of. I mean, we had recently, there was some discussion. I saw some things on Facebook the other day about some people who claim to be empaths who have that, which is really kind of codependency, right? But
and how they attract narcissists.
And how they attract narcissists. It's not that they are narcissists themselves. It's that what they are is attractive to a narcissist. And you have to recognize, what is it that I am putting out there? If I'm codependent, or if I want to, you know, gussy it up and make myself feel good about myself, call myself an empath instead. Either way, it kind of messes up your life. But if that's what you are, then that's what's attracting that other type.
Yeah. And I think in this case, one of the things that came back to me was that I told you a personal story of my own, that for a long time I tended to attract men who maybe wanted a relationship. They just didn't really want a relationship with me. And I had to ask myself, so let's just take this example here. You know, what is the underlying thing about someone who cheats on you or lies to you? The underlying thing behind that particular or those particular behaviors is kind of a lack of respect. So perhaps the vibe that this person is putting out is not really respecting self, maybe kind of being a doormat, letting people walk all over her or him. I can't remember if this was male or female, but letting somebody take advantage of you. And in that case, if that's the vibe you're putting out, you're going to continue to attract people that cheat on you and lie. So that's a thing that you have to reconcile with yourself. It's not that, you know, you're a cheater or a liar, but you're that vibe, you're that bait, that thing that they're attracted to. Because if you're not really standing up for yourself and you're not really taking care of yourself, you're easy pickings for someone who's going to cheat or lie on you.
You could kind of look at it in a way, too, that if you're that type of person, maybe you are also cheating and lying to yourself. You're not respecting yourself so you lie to yourself about who you are and what you want. And you're kind of cheating on yourself. You're not sticking to your goals, being authentic.
You know,
you're right. And that's allowing that person to come in. So that's one way to maybe look at it if you want a slightly more literal way of looking at it. There's lots of different ways of looking at it, which aren't all wrong or right. Obviously, the analogy of the worm, he's not being particularly bird-like to himself.
No.
But
he is what the bird wants to eat. He is what the bird's attracted to.
Exactly.
And so, like I was saying back to myself with my attracting men that didn't want to have a relationship with me, what I had to realize was I wasn't asserting myself. I wasn't asserting that I needed to be respected, and there's a whole big issue about where this comes in.
And it's one thing to say I want to be respected, and it's another thing
to act in
like
a way
you need that you're going to be respected and not take any crap.
And my thing was I always was okay with coming in second to everything, and I had to finally say to myself, I want to be with a partner that at some point puts me as a priority. I don't have to be the top priority in their life every second of the day, but I darn sure want to rate somewhere high in their life, and I want to be put as a priority. I want a relationship with me to be a priority. And until I made that commitment to myself, I wasn't able to attract anybody that was going to make that commitment to me, because I was putting out the, hey, come walk all over me. I'm not really all that. You know, I'm not going to yell at you if you just don't want to stick around. I had to assert myself that this is what I want and kind of put it out to the universe, put it out in the world. This is what I want. And once I did, guess what? I was able to attract that. So, again, look at the underlying things beyond that behavior. What does that behavior mean? You know, are you not really being honest with yourself? Are you cheating yourself out of the stuff that maybe you really do want? And are you maybe putting out that vibe to those cheaters and liars that, hey, it's okay to do that to me?
Right. And even though obviously in retrospect, it's not okay because you're upset and you're angry about it, But there's something in your message, in your body language, in your attitude, in your energy that is not shutting those people down early. You're letting them get too far in. And I think identifying what that is in you, because that's the only thing you can change, right?
Right.
Is yourself. So if this keeps happening, there's got to be something in your own life that you can change to do that and start with what is it that's attracting these people and what kind of parts of my personality, for lack of a better word, can I modify? Can I change and say, you know what, this isn't serving me. It is harming me. And because we can change, it's nice to say, I don't need to change for anyone, but you can change for yourself. And if it's to make yourself a better person and find the relationships that you want, I think it behooves us to say, yeah, damn it, I will change. I can change myself. We're extremely adaptable. It's one of the joys of being at the top of the food chain like we are, is that we are infinitely adaptable. Although I can't fly yet, and I still kind of keep hoping that one of these days I'm going to wake up and be able
to
just fly.
Just keep flapping.
But until then, there's so much that we can do with ourselves. It's just giving ourselves the permission to do so and not take that as some kind of, that meant I was a bad person before. And you don't have to judge yourself to where you were. You just have to decide to be somewhere where you want to be.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. You don't have to judge where you're at. You just have to get yourself in a place where you want to be. There you go.
We have a little bit more time in this segment. Mm-hmm. So want to bring everyone up to date on, want to talk a little Ashley Madison, since we're talking about cheaters and liars.
Oh, yes.
Right? Because we haven't
talked
about that in a little bit since, you know, kind of came out and they've been dropping names and whatnot. And one of the most recent articles that I saw was someone had done some analysis.
You've been living in the South too long now.
You done did it. They had done some analysis on the data dumps that had been put out there. And it seems, and there are certainly other explanations, but the most likely explanations of many of these things is that a very large percentage of the female profiles in Ashley Madison were either fake or had never actually been used. They were set up maybe by and that's not to say there are none there, because I
obviously
actually know
I'm
someone
sure,
who has met some women through there. However, there are a lot of female profiles that were set up, and because they were able to take a look at the raw logs, they were able to look at what they call metadata, data about the data. So you can, when you create your profile, you know, you have your name and your gender and all that stuff, but the system also is going to record, when did this last person last log in? When was this record? When was the record created? When was it last updated? When did they last message somebody? Where did they message them from? You know, they have your IP address, which is your machine's address on the internet. So they gather all this stuff, and a lot of them they got created and were never set up. They were created with email addresses at ashleymadison.com, suggesting that were these employees at ashleymadison.com. There are other.
Oh.
Right. There were a lot that came from an IP address, which was an ashleymadison.com IP address. Now, there are possibilities that maybe there had to be some data restored at some point because of a problem and they had to just put some data in there. That's a possibility.
Maybe some seed data they collected outside and seeded it.
You know, there are other possibilities, but they're not, when you look at all the different types of data that they found.
37 million addresses, though, or 37 million accounts.
Right, but a large percentage were men. Mm-hmm. But of the females, also you have, let's say a woman is suspicious that her husband might be on there. You create a profile and then you start looking. So that's also accounts for another larger number. But at the Ashley Madison folks have said, you know, a lot of people use this for entertainment. So you go out there to fantasize about meeting someone. You may actually never even pull the trigger. It's just nice to have an idea that, you know, maybe someone has messaged you, and it just having someone to message is enough of a confidence, of a ego boost for some guys that they never actually get to the point of cheating, but they're out there anyway to kind of look around and kind of play with fire a little bit without, you know, too much risk of getting burned. So there's certainly
The data gets stolen.
Exactly. Although, you know, obviously the number of men, obviously, who will say that they actually ever met anyone on there will mostly say, no, not me. I just looked on there for a little bit, but I never met anybody. Well, if there really weren't very many women on there, that may actually be true.
Well, you know, and... But, The other thing is that one of the things when we, a couple years ago, we did the show on catfishing and romance scams, which we're going to actually be doing another show on that coming up. I'm not sure exactly when we're going to do it, but we're going to do another show on that. One of the things that we found out was that a lot of men get approached by women from Russia, mm-hmm. and women get approached by men from Africa.
That's right.
So I wonder if some of those female profiles were from Russia, perhaps?
Don't know. A lot of the ones that they did. But the issue is that how much can you rely on it? That what they're really looking at is a lot of these entries came from IP addresses that are internal to Ashley Madison. A lot of the email addresses that were created there were created with an Ashley Madison account. A lot of the women's names were suspicious. They didn't fall into the normal statistical dispersion of, and I'm not a statistician, so I'm probably, you know, statisticians out there, you're saying those are not the right words. Anyway, there's some kind of dispersal of names. You're going to expect to see a lot more Sues than you're going to see a lot more
Svetlanas.
Exactly. and so they were finding certain odd names to be found a lot more than you would think. Now, obviously, people do use fake names on sites like these, but they weren't quite. It was they were just saying they didn't say the actual names, but they were saying there are a lot of names that just didn't really seem to make sense as being.
Maybe people were using their stripper names.
That could be it. That could be it. Thor and Vanessa, you have a date tonight.
So interesting. Very, very interesting. I had not read that. I hadn't, you know, followed up. I knew they were still trying to do some analysis on the metadata.
And there's all sorts of people jumping in. And some people I've seen analysis that has been horribly skewed and sketchy that was, you know, it had to have been an inside person. It had to be a woman because of some of the terminology they used. And it was not very much, but this particular researcher, I found the methods that he used were pretty up and up. And he also said, you know, he also gave there are other possibilities for what this is. You can kind of weigh in your own mind what the likelihood of those are, but we have to admit that there could be other things we don't know. Like, again, a system went down and they had to rebuild a bunch of data. And so they had to use some dummy data to, because you have required fields, right? But if you lost that data,
you got to put something.
You got to have something in there. So let's just put something safe, like an Ashley Madison email address in there, just so that it's full. You know, possibilities, but more likely than not, most of the Ashley Madison customers were not getting what they were paying for.
Apparently not.
Certainly not if they were paying to have their data removed, since we know that all that happened was a little flag got put in their record saying this person paid to have their data removed. That data was never actually removed, and that's gonna come back to bite them big time. Yeah. And supposedly a couple people up in Toronto have committed suicide, and there's a possibility that it was because they were found in that. Toronto police were still researching it last I saw.
Yeah, and I think there was a guy in England, too, maybe that also had committed suicide, because I think Ashley Madison started out as an English, as a UK
yes,
company.
Yes, I believe that is correct as well. With a name like Ashley Madison. And that actually kind of leads a little bit into the video tip that we just put up on Facebook this week. Actually, this morning, we released it talking about sending sexy pictures and texts to your partner and some of the possibilities that could arise.
Because
even though you trust your partner and what happens between the two of you, two consenting adults, is completely your business. If you're using a medium that is not completely secure and offline, it may become a lot of other people's business, whether you want it to or not, whether they should have it as their business or not.
Yeah, right? Really good point. And
whether it be someone hacking into Twitter or what is it, Snapchat? Was Snapchat the one that had an issue a few months back? There was some kind of a messaging app that people were using because it's supposed to delete your texts within 6 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
But it turned out that, you know, people who received it could save it, certainly, you know, take a screen capture or whatever and save it ad infinitum. And then when you've broken up, they could release it and do all sorts of nasty things. So if you haven't checked it out, head on over to our Facebook page, check out the video.
Yeah, we put up a video last week and then we put up a video this week. So there's a couple of them out there. And you can go check those out. We always leave them up on Facebook. So you can even scroll through the videos and check out any you might have missed, because we had some cool stuff.
That's
and we got some cool new videos coming up. So there you go.
So why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk with Psychology Today therapist Hernando Chavez.
All right. Thanks so much, and thanks for listening to
Mod Love.
Hi, Jody here from Mod Love. I hope you guys are enjoying the show. I just wanted to remind you all to visit our website at modloveradio.com. You'll notice that on our homepage on the right-hand side, there's a blue box. If you put your information in there, we will send you some free goodies. And while you're there, you can also watch videos, listen to episodes, subscribe to the show, or even check out our gallery of expert guests. You can also search for articles and send us your questions. Again, that web address is modloveradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks for listening to Mod Love. Welcome back, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
We're very excited tonight because we have a special guest who we actually found on Psychology Today. And you know, if you're a regular
listener, one of our favorite websites.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite websites. We, if you listen to the show, you know that we love that particular website because we're pulling up articles from it all the time. And we have Dr. Hernando Chavez with us tonight. He's from out in LA, and we know we have a lot of listeners out there in California and in the LA area. We actually got his name, interestingly enough, from Dr. Ava Cadell, who is a world-renowned sexpert. And she actually said that this was somebody that she trusted, and she had him on her website. So thank you so much, Dr. Chavez, for being with us tonight.
No problem at all. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, so tell us a little bit about what you do, because like I said, I've read some of your stuff in Psychology Today, and Dr. Cadell was just, she just thought you were wonderful. Tell us a little bit about your practice and what you do before we get into the meat of what we're going to talk about tonight about male sexuality.
Sure. I split my work weeks amongst different sort of hats that I wear. I'm a sex educator, so I teach human sexuality courses at a college called Orange Coast College in Costa Mesa, California. And there I work typically with 18 to 22-year-olds, giving them their first taste of sex education and sexuality instruction. So I'll do that two times a week. I typically will do maybe two or three presentations per month, whether it's traveling abroad, in the States or out of the country, doing sex education workshops. In addition, a few days a week, I also work as a sex therapist in Beverly Hills, California. And there I work with sort of a split between sexual concerns, more traditional ones such as early ejaculation and erection difficulties, low desire, and maybe couple intimacy difficulties. And then the other half of my practice focuses on what I call erotic minorities. And these would be people who are maybe in the minority when it comes to their sexual expression or sexual identity. And that could be people who are LGBT, fetishists, individuals into BDSM or non-monogamy and polyamory. So it's really a split. So there's a lot of diversity amongst my clients.
So you had mentioned that in the sexual education part that some of these 18, 20-year-olds, a lot of them, this is their first chance of getting sex ed, any kind of sexual education. Is that changes in schools? It's been very many years, obviously, since I've been in high school, but I remember getting that stuff in 9th and 10th grade. And has it changed a lot out there?
That's a great question. Actually, I was watching a John Oliver on Last Week Tonight episode, and if you look on YouTube, he just put out a episode focusing on sex education in our country. And what you'll find is that it's typically a split between about a third of kids don't get any sex ed, and those are oftentimes kids in the Bible Belt or more religious or conservative areas. Then you'll have about a third who get what we call abstinence only, and that's focusing on fear-based sex education to try to encourage kids to say no and not teach them about sex ed, but rather, you know, offer them misinformation and, in a sense, try to control their sexual selves. And then about a third of kids get what we call comprehensive sex education. And that's what there's still some flaws in the comprehensive sex ed programs, which is often they focus on physiology, anatomy, STIs, maybe condoms, but they don't really go into detail about more social issues like LGBT issues, the use of pornography, decision making, relationships. I mean, there's a number of components that are still, I think, not being addressed in our schools for fear of, you know, talking about maybe, you know, controversial or diverse subjects that may be taboo for people that are under 18.
Sure. Thank you. So want to go right into the questions?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So the first question is about, you know, so arousal is predominantly a mental exercise. And certainly I went through this years ago of getting in my own head so much about my performance that I kept making my performance worse. And I imagine that's something that you deal with a lot. And are there things that a guy can do on his own without going to a therapist to see if he can kind of, you know, stop the thought train from making things worse and worse?
Stop the monkey mind.
Right.
Right. You know, what men typically, and women as well, this is really a human issue, but there's a component of sexual anxiety that a lot of us aren't talking about, and we keep it inside of our heads, which perpetuates this anxiety. It's also called performance anxiety. And what happens is we get into this loop, this negative feedback loop of anxiety, where we have these distracting thoughts that are coming up, and we feed into them, and we get into this repetitive cycle that we start repeating these thoughts and this overthinking. And typically they have negative connotations with them as well. Some examples of thoughts can be, will I stay hard? Will I last long enough? Is she experiencing, you know, pleasure? Is she going to have an orgasm? Am I doing a good job? And there's all this self-talk that's actually negative, and it perpetuates, I think, people to have this performance anxiety. Oftentimes you'll find that communicating is one way to begin to address that. Just being able to say that you have some of this anxiety and even address some of the things like, are you enjoying yourself when we have sex, or what helps you reach orgasm, can oftentimes help alleviate some of that, those fears and those insecurities. Also, in the moment, typically those distracting thoughts need to be redirected with replacement thoughts. For my clients, I'll often encourage them, if you have these distracting thoughts, to come up with some mantras and some breathing that they can kind of incorporate during sex, to take a deep breath and say, get into the breath, get into the moment, feel the sensation, get into your partner, and really try to get out of their head and back into their body, which is not easy to do, but we oftentimes can teach clients doing that using mindfulness and breathing exercises, which I've found to be incredible for not only anxiety management and reduction, but also for people getting a more intimate and sort of body and somatic experience with sex. A lot of men are outside of their body. They're actually in a more performance sort of robotic experience where they're in their heads. And if they can learn to get into their body, into their sexuality, it can be much, much more helpful for anxiety. And lastly, imagery meditation. Oftentimes we'll encourage people to do sort of reenact scenarios while they're listening to, let's say, light music or an app like Headspace, which is great for meditation, to envision, you know, scenarios of sexuality where they are experiencing low anxiety and they're in the body and in the breath and they're experiencing these wonderful sexual experiences. It's great for the mind to have that positive psychology incorporated.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that sounds like you incorporate a little bit of everything into what you're doing, a little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy as well as kind of mindfulness and meditation kind of stuff. So it sounds like you really run the gamut.
Well, you know, you're right. And I think it has to cover both the psychology and the physiology. So if they're also experiencing erection difficulties, I would incorporate Kegel exercises. If they're early ejaculators, I'd incorporate start-stop and masturbatory peaking exercises. Really, I want them to kind of have a full embodied experience of ways and skills and tools that they can use to help them sort of manage this anxiety. Because when we do exercises and prepare and build confidence, I think that reduces anxiety in the moment.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't speak, you know, for Steve, but I know at least for women, if you can help reduce some of that anxiety in the moment and kind of get out of your head a little bit, it does wonders for being able just to kind of relax it and do it and enjoy yourself. Because you're right, men and women both have that anxiety. Well,
and I'll tell you what, the things I just described for men, they work well for women as well too. And women oftentimes have a hard time getting into their body and getting into the experience because there's so many distracting thoughts that they're experiencing, whether it's environmental or body image or, you know, whatever it may be. But it works for both genders.
Great.
Yeah. So, well, speaking a little bit about men here again, so can you talk to us a little bit about the male ego and kind of the role that it plays in men's sexuality? And I'll just say, for instance, you know, the ego boost that men get, or maybe that they're looking for by sleeping with several women, or how does that work, or it doesn't, in our modern society, and ways, and what are some ways that a guy can get a replacement good feeling by seeking a more long-term relationship? You know, how does that ego feed into that?
You know, ego and masculinity are what I perceive to be social constructs, and we're not born with these ideas of what we're expected to be or how we should act. It's more of a socialization effect, so I actually have more of a focus on the gender roles and the gender expectations that are taught by society as social constructs. So I find that, you know, as we grow and mature, there's these expectations that we start either being attributed to us or we're noticing in order to fit in that we start ascribing to. And I really feel like we have tainted what the idea of masculinity is into what people have this expectation of what it should be. And for a lot of people, masculinity doesn't work for relationships. It actually hinders, you know, their ability to become close, to become sensitive, to become romantic, to allow some of the inner desires that they have to truly come out in an authentic manner without having this desire or feeling or need to try to impose something that society expects upon them. And examples of that can be anywhere from, I think you had mentioned about, let's say, having lots of partners. There are actually a number of men who do enjoy romance or do enjoy maybe monogamy or long-term relationships. However, there is this feeling that if they don't express maybe some of those more societally typical high numbers of partners or, as you mentioned, betting women, that they may not fit in or they may be made fun of. And so there is this kind of peer socialization and sort of peer pressure that people experience. I encourage people to try to look at the insecurities that they have when it comes to their desire and their sexual concerns. You know, a lot of denial is present for a lot of people, and to really be authentic about what you want and what you're looking for, because there are people that enjoy casual sex and who aren't looking necessarily for long-term relationships. But if those people were honest about it, they could find others that were honest about it as well too, and they might be able to have more authentic, honest, real experiences. The same goes for those looking for more long-term relationships. I think that the honesty factor and the authenticity factor would help if we could all be a little bit more honest with who we are rather than what society expects of us.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times we have said that on this show. So much confusion would really go away if people were a little bit more authentic. I think the people that want a relationship are afraid to say it. And then the people that don't want a relationship are afraid to say that too. And so everybody's just confused and they're wandering around in a state of confusion.
Right. And if people are playing games and people are trying to wear masks and try to be different people to get what they want, you know, there are individuals who say they want to be in a relationship and they're actually just looking for a one-night stand or something more casual. And then there are folks that are pretending to be more casual but really wanting a long-term relationship. And so people are trying to sort of, you know, squirm their way into what they need rather than being upfront and honest about it. And it can take its toll, I think. A lot of people get hurt along the way.
Absolutely.
So the next question is, what can men do if they're either worried that they're either oversexed or undersexed? And these are, again, social constructs, so we're probably getting these things from the media, but, you know, we may be getting fed some idea that a man should be, you know, wanting sex this many times a week, and if you're finding that you want it more than that, are you feeling guilty that you're oversexed? And if you want it less, are you feeling guilty that you're undersexed or judging yourself? And how can guys who are battling that kind of get themselves into the sense of you're normal where you're at?
First thing I would do is I'd look at the word normal. And I'd noticed that it has this connotation that it's very dichotomous. There's either normal or abnormal, and that's really difficult for us to navigate whether something is either right or wrong. I would actually toss out the word normal. I would challenge this of what is normal for society and actually look at what's normal for you. And if we can bring it back down to a micro level rather than the macro societal level, what's normal for you will oftentimes help sort of challenge some of that anxiety, but also, I think, help you with that process of becoming more authentic. You know, what is normal? What is normal when it comes to sexual experiences? You know, you might say that approximately once a week couples are having, let's say, sexual intercourse in America, but is that normal for you? And are we truly dating people who are similar to us? dating people who have either desires to want to be sexual, let's say once a month versus, let's say, 3 or 4 times a week. I think we have to look for partners that also enhance who we are as sexual beings and have similar ideals within our sexual relationships. You know, when we think about the idea of worry, worry has never enhanced a sexual relationship or experience. So we have to start looking at what it is that's making us worried. And a lot of times it is about us not looking at our insecurities and trying to be something that we're not. I find that the more that we stop comparing ourselves to what should be and just accepting who we truly are, and then sharing that with our partners, we'll actually make a lot more progress in regards to being true to ourselves, to honoring our authentic self, and also honoring our partner's authentic self. Because then we can navigate, you know, if there are two people that are together and one does like sex twice a week and the other one likes sex once every month, there can be a way for that communication to bring those differences up so that one can masturbate more. Maybe you can do mutual masturbation. Maybe you can create sort of experiences that can enhance both partners' authenticity without harming the relationship.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because I think a lot of people are very worried about that. You know, should I be having more sex, and are we not having enough sex, and are we having too much sex? And I think, you can read articles in Cosmo and all of these different magazines like that, you know, about how much you should be having sex and how much celebrities are having sex, and it kind of gets in your head. And
right.
And I think that, you know, the more, like you said, the more we're able to bring that back down to the individual, the micro level, the more that people are going to be able to kind of get over the fact that it doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. You know, it can be what's right for you, what's normal for you. So let me ask you this. So if you have, if we have any listeners that are out there that are dealing with some of these issues, especially the ones that you're an expert in, how can they get in contact with you and how can they find you?
Best way to find me is through Psychology Today or through my website, and that's drhernandochavez.com. And that's spelled drhernandochavez.com. Or you can just Google me. And as long as there's the S at the end of my last name, it'll come up.
You'll get
all
the
my
right
different
guy.
Yeah. There is a guy in Colombia with that, be a kind of a far trip for you to see. He's gotten easy down in South America.
He might have some different prescriptions for us.
Right, right.
Well, thank you very much. We very much appreciate your willingness to come on here and talk with us about this, because these are definitely issues that I think a lot of our listeners, I mean, we get questions from people about stuff like this all the time, and I think it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had, and I think we almost sometimes need to give people permission to have the conversation about some of these topics that maybe they don't want to talk about over cocktails at the bar or whatever, but maybe they really need to be having these conversations.
Yeah, I think you see a lot of the stuff. I've seen a number of these things in, like, online forums and whatnot, where, you know, people are trying to discuss, and, you know, there was one a few days ago where they were talking about, you know, how long guys are having sex for. And, you know, the first few people out there, oh, you know, we're having, you know, 40 to 60 minutes or so. And I think that meant everyone who was having, you know, 5-minute sexual sessions, just they clammed up. They weren't going to answer at all, because they were all probably going to feel like, oh, man, I suck. And so that's not really a great forum necessarily for people to kind of get a feel for it. Hey, you're okay. You're where you're at. And, you know, a bunch of people on the internet aren't necessarily telling the truth, but even if they are, that's what mm-hmm. works for them.
Exactly. I mean, even looking at the research, it suggests that the for heterosexuals, the sexual experiences they have are about 8 to 12 minutes, and that's including intercourse and foreplay.
Right.
Intercourse is only about 2 to 7 minutes on average. So, you know, the expectations of us trying to be these sexual gods like we see in pornography, I mean, that's all a fantasy. That's editing. There are shoots that take, you know, 12, 14 hours to create this sort of 30-minute clip. But people are comparing themselves, and I think that is doing some disservices to folks when they're not understanding the reality of human sexual experiences.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much, Dr. Chavez, and we're going to put up your website, and we'll also put up some links to your articles on Psychology Today so that people can find you and check you out. And if they are having issues and they need to maybe talk to somebody, they can get in touch with you and do that. And I think with that, we're going to have to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show, and we'll be back. You have been listening to
Mod Love. This is Stephen Cardinal of Mod Love, and if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to head out to iTunes and leave us a review. Doing so will really help us reach more people and touch more lives. And if you're not an iTunes user, even a review on our Facebook page will go a long way in showing your support. Thanks a lot, and thanks for listening to Mod Love.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
And thanks so much to Dr. Chavez for being able to be on the show with us tonight. We're very excited about that. And I don't think I called him Hugo at all.
That's good.
Yes, because Hugo Chavez is a dictator.
Someone completely different. And,
yes.
And based on our discussions with Dr. Chavez here, he did not seem like a dictator in any way.
No.
Very nice guy.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice guy. And we hope to have him back on at some time, too, because he's a fantastic interview, and I think he does some really great work. And for all of our listeners out in California, he's out in your area. He's out in L.A., so look him up. If you have any of these issues we talked about, you have some issues maybe for a sex therapist or some male sexuality stuff you need to go talk to somebody about, he's got to do it.
Damn right.
Yep, there you go. So for our third segment, we wanted to do a little nod to Dr. Dyer. And I think a lot of people may not realize this. He was on my list of people that I wanted to have on the show. But I knew he'd been sick, and I knew he had been doing the I Can Do It conference,
right,
and that kind of stuff.
Because
he was always on the road traveling and all this kind of stuff. So he was on my list of people, and I never got to him, and I'm extremely sad about that because I think he would have just been a delight to have on the show and to chat with.
And but I'm not sure a seance on just an audio program will quite work.
Probably not.
Because you need to be able to see the thing on the table moving and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Unless we did it with Periscope.
True. Any Periscope users out there ever want to watch us recording one of these, let us know.
Yeah, because we both have Periscope on our phones
now. We have it on our phones. We just have not become big users of it.
No, but, Jody went to iPhone. I don't know if you guys were following my saga of going to iPhone, but
I
switched
over. It
wasn't
much of a saga. It was actually pretty easy.
Yeah, I'm a techie nerd, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But again, we wanted to give a little bit of nod to Dr. Dyer, and I don't know if a lot of people knew the story of his most recent divorce. And Dr. Dyer, like many people who are out in kind of in the world talking about how people can make their lives better, took a lot of flack because in the last few years, he had a lot of stuff, a lot of kind of drama going on in his life, for lack of a better word. He got leukemia. But he also...
Which is hard to take flack for catching a disease of some kind.
But yes, but he did, because he talks about a lot of the law of attraction stuff where, we can heal ourselves and whatever. And people were like, well, if you can heal yourself, just heal yourself. And he was saying, that's not really how it works, in that, it's that a lot of times that we live on that level that sometimes creates, and I'm probably saying it very poorly, sometimes we live on a level of stress or whatever that creates this disease in our body. And just because we may have the spiritual ability to, cure ourselves doesn't mean we know how. Doesn't mean we can.
Yeah, it doesn't mean, sometimes the disease still wins.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you didn't gain by having that positive energy or whatever the proper term is. I'm not a big reader of his stuff. But
yeah, and he considered every challenge that he had a gift, which was part of what I think it was actually the name of this, The Gift in the Storm. And he actually considered everything that he went through a gift. And one of the things that he went through was back in 2003 or 2004. I think it was 2003. Yeah, spring of 2003. He wound up becoming separated from his wife of 20-something years because she came to him.
So actually in 2001, this is
2003
is when he wrote this blog post. But yeah, it kind of talks about, they separated. She had fallen in love with someone else, if I'm reading the article correctly.
Yes.
And so there was a, he was at this point of writing this article.
He was still in a deep depression.
He was suffering deep depression. He had lost a lot of weight. His family were all kind of, Dad, you got to do something about this. You know, this isn't you. And
right.
You know, and he finally got the right focus. You know, they said, you need to write. That's what you have a passion for. And obviously depression is a hard enemy to battle. And yet it's, when once you've battled it, in hindsight, you can say it actually wasn't, the solution was kind of easy. He had to just do something he was passionate about.
Right.
It's getting the you know, power and energy to get yourself to do it and believe that, hey, this could actually work. And then see it, I think, in retrospect and see it actually did work. But I mean, everything seems daunting when you're at the bottom of a well. But then when you get out of the well, you can look down. It's like,
that wasn't that long of a climb.
But it's the fear of starting, the intimidation of starting that.
And what if I fall? And what if I can't make it to the top? But one of the things that, you know, we've talked about on the show before is about conscious uncoupling. And this is not a new concept. I was reading something about the other day that Catherine Woodward Thomas has recently made it most famous. And Gwyneth Paltrow and her husband, Chris Martin, actually wrote a blog post when they got divorced. They're talking about their conscious uncoupling. But this has been a concept that's been around since the 70s. And I think Dr. Dyer actually has one of the best examples of what that meant. And I don't think it's in this particular blog post, but I saw an interview with him when he talked about it. And he basically kind of said he had to get to the point that he not only forgave Marceline, which was his wife, because he was truly still in love with her, but he took responsibility for his own part in the marriage not continuing, and he was able to let her go with love because he wanted her to be happy and to be loved more than he wanted to be with her. And that is a point that I think so many of us, when we're heartbroken, it's so hard for us to get to that point. And he was able to do that. He was able to get to that point where he said, I love you more than I have the need to be with you. You know, I want you to go be happy. I want you to go be with the person that you love. And he took responsibility for the things that he said he felt like he had contributed, you know, not being there a lot. You know, of course, like I said, he was traveling a lot. He was touring. He was speaking. He did so many things for so many people, and I think probably in that process, he may have, by his own admission, not done some things at home that he needed to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're away, you don't necessarily see the cracks, right, the things that are kind of starting to fall apart a little bit because you're not really there, and you're obviously not in your partner's head to kind of find out that they're, you know, when they come home, they're like, oh, I'm home alone again tonight. And all those little micro negative feelings that kind of build up, you're not there to sense them or disperse them or anything. And, you know,
right.
By the time you get in there, it's a speeding freight train coming at you rather than, you know, if you had known ahead of time. So, we're not saying that doing something like this is easy.
No, it's not something that's just going to come easy to a lot of people.
Just, you know, love your partner even more and you know, wish them the best and you'll be happy. It's very hard to get there, but it pays off for you if you put that effort in to try to get there, because that's the weight that you're going to be carrying with you, whether it be anger or self-doubt or whatever it is. You're going to benefit from that work of, I think, getting to that point.
Yes, and not only benefit from getting to that point, but everybody around you is going to benefit from it too. Because he was a shining beacon to anybody else that was going through this, who came home one day and a 20-year partner said, I'm in love with somebody else, I don't want to be here anymore. And I'm sure she didn't say it quite in that manner, but imagine how people who also had that happen to them, they got to see how he dealt with it. And he didn't lie about it. He's like, he was in a deep depression.
Mm-hmm. It
and for 2 years at least.
And he didn't do it on his own. You know, people kept coming to him and say, hey, you need to do something. You need to do something. And, you know, finally he got, you know, picked himself up and, you know, recognized that he'd been, you know, as he says, wallowing in his ego and, that he had lost his connection to God or to the calling intent that kind of drives you and finding that drive, that passion again to do something. Because really sitting there, right, we're bodies in motion tend to stay in motion. Bodies at rest tend to stay at rest. And when you're in depression, you tend to stay at rest emotionally, mentally, and that's where you want to stay. But once you can get yourself in motion, things will come along with that. And we're not talking about, you know, I know some people need, therapists or medications and stuff to get over serious
depression. This was a situational thing, not a chemical imbalance in this case.
So we're not casting judgment on people who need that extra help, but these types of emotional types where you have an event that you know caused it, you can do a lot on your own. Obviously, having that supportive family behind him helped as well, so it's not really alone, but at some point you need to get back in motion, I think, is basically it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have not read it, we'll actually put this blog up so that you can kind of read it. And there's a lot of stuff. If you're not a fan of Dr. Dyer, I would encourage you maybe to go out and read it. If you don't want to read a full book, go read some of his quotes. He is what I would consider the embodiment of compassion. This man, one of the things that I loved about him is no matter who tried to pull him into whatever political debate or whatever, he never went there.
Right.
He stayed in that place of compassion, but he struggled to stay in that place. And I think that's where most of us struggle, is to stay in that place of compassion. And he was able to do it, and he did it very publicly. And he did it in a way that he was able to come out on the other side, and he was really able to come out, and he was still a loving best friend to his ex-wife.
Right. And I think in some ways, coming out publicly and being compassionate almost holds you to it. It's like when we talked about when we first started dating each other and we said, what does a breakup look like? Because you've said it out loud, because you've put it out there, it's more likely to hold you to it.
It's accountability.
So if you go out there and you say, here's what I believe in, I mean, we see what happens to especially politicians who say one thing, then they get caught, you know, in a bathroom looking for sexual favors or something like that. That, I mean, they get destroyed because they weren't living their truth. They didn't allow that to hold them up. But for people like Dr. Dyer, who got out there and said, here's what I am, there was enough visibility around that can help keep you on the straight and narrow sometimes. So again, it's putting the intention out there, not just inside, putting the intention out to the universe saying, here's what I want. Other people can help you stay accountable to yourself if they know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're out there saying, have compassion for the people around you, what a wonderful way of showing that compassion than to say, okay, here's an issue that I'm having in my life where I'm struggling with that compassion, and here's how I'm dealing with it.
Right.
You know? So, go out to his website, drwaynedyer.com. Check out his books, all of his books. There is even a movie right now that I believe right now, this week, the week or so that he's passed away. This is the week of September 3rd. They're actually allowing people to view the movie that he did called The Shift. They're allowing that to be viewed for free.
Oh, nice.
Right now. So if you guys are out there listening, go out to drwaynedyer.com, check out some of his stuff, and I challenge you not to be inspired after you read some of his stuff. I almost challenge you not to be, because he's such a wonderful man. And with that, I think we're going to have to get on out of here, aren't we?
I think we are done.
We are out of here. So again, thanks so much for listening, guys. And if you haven't done so, go on out to modloveradio.com. You can do a couple of things out there. You can join our listener club, where you'll get emails from us with all the latest stuff that's going on with Mod Love and some articles and things like that to check out, and also replays of shows. You can also go out there and get a training series that we have created for those of you who might be doing online dating. And it's a series of videos that teaches you how to set up your profile and how to set it up right so that you're going to get the best results. So you can go out there and do that. And there's also articles and stuff that you can read. There's all kind of stuff you can do. So go check out modloveradio.com. And send us a note. If you want to send us an email, you can click on the contact and contact us through there. And send us an email. Send us your questions. We love getting these listener questions. If you think we're full of crap, tell us. Whatever. Just, you know, tell us.
We can take it.
And send us a message on Facebook. Talk to us on Facebook. We love that too.
And we won't name you if you don't want to be named.
No, we don't. We never name people on the show, because I feel like, I don't know, it's my whole, I used to be a counselor and I don't want to talk about people's names and stuff. So everything's always anonymous for us, because, you know, I'm a wacko like that. But anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys, and you have been listening to
Mod Love.